Rattabatan and Patricia. So he ended all of life. He was summarily transferred over and put on a kilt and a seal of the Black Watch. But they were, Buckles had you know, what do you want? How much? What do you want? Do you want to furnish that pants? This? What do you want? So the Black Watch were just great.
Montreal establishment certainly were very keen on the Black Watch, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Well, whereas Queen's Own had pretty heavy going.
Which is surprising, really.
Only because they said they were the oldest regiment. Well, then when it came time to turn around, of course, Jim Streich and I were together, and Jim said, Streich, you got the aces, ladies, and what are we going to do? And he said, I don't want to go. I said, well, geez, far be it for me to go and tell Princess Patricia she hadn't got a regiment any longer. I said, at least you've got a 3rd Battalion in the militia you can go back to. Whereas Patricia's have been regular from the start. In the fact of the first war, they were wartime regiments. They've been regular ever since, and there's nowhere to return to. Whereas the Queen's Own have always got, and the Black Watch, the name lives. But, however, that wasn't the reason it was done. It was done to make a regimental system work.
Now I see.
I don't think cross postings going strenuously now.
Perhaps not. You've got 3 battalions of each, I suppose.
Well, 3 battalions of each, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I think even with COs. However, I think we've got to leave it in the hands of smart people like Ramsey now.
Yeah. What about the odd one out, of course, of this. The parachute regiment or the special
airborne
well, regiment, they call it now. And,
I think that's got a little out of control. It comes and goes. It's the original conception was it would be a, this was one of John Laird's babies, and it would be an airborne battalion or regiment, and you would post people to it from battalions. They wouldn't rebadge or anything. In other words, you'd have a thing like you had in Panda. That's not awfully successful. Panda was when you formed the NATO brigade. But that was the idea, that it wouldn't be a rebadge. You'd do a 2-year tour of duty and then back. And gradually it got its own badges, and then it got its own color, its own colonel. And now, I don't know, isn't it terrible, since I ceased being Colonel of the Patricias, it was a Patricia commando at one time and an RCR commando. Well, that's still the same or not, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. I understand they have some problem in manning it, I think, or in getting sufficient people.
Well, they shouldn't have, because you just detail people to it, but of course, you'll see the Army's very much under strength. How much, I don't know. That's your remaining problem.
Yeah.
And of course, if Europe's kept up to strength, well, there was no problem when I was there, because everybody was up to strength anyway. I mean, if anybody had to go short, it wasn't Europe. I imagine Europe.
Still the same thing.
I think they've been, they put them on a reduced establishment, I think. But at least what their establishment is, even if it's a reduced one, now, I imagine they have to man that. People don't like putting in reports to NATO saying I.
No, I guess not.
I mean, we don't.
No, we don't.
Lots of other nations
do. That do, yeah. Huh. Well, that's very interesting. And so, you after you retired, how long was it before you became a colonel of the PPCLI?
Oh, I was colonel. I'm very wrong there. You're supposed to be. The appointment is for 5 years, and 1 5-year extension if you have. That's subsequently been changed to 3. I was, when Hammy Galt died, I've been doing a lot of his work for him. I mean, anything that had to be done in the field, you can't expect somebody like Hammy to go keep track of what's happening to corporals and things. And I'd been doing most of Hammy's problems. If he get a problem thrown at him, I'd be doing it. I never expected to be succeed him as colonel of the regiment, though. And when he did die, didn't say who's going to be colonel of the regiment. I said, what's the system for? And I was, I suppose, the senior one at that point, I was brigadier, I was 21st Brigade, I think. Calgary. And they said, oh, there's a new order coming out. It's all being handled in Ottawa and so on. And, you know, the regiment, the serving battalions will be consulted and so on. And let it go with that. I was never consulted, so I never paying attention, but I thought they'd probably pick Shorty Cahoon or something like that. So.
Probably, I don't know, Shorty was a very nice man. But the tendency to talk to a long time of the troops has struck me, and maybe that's why he wasn't considered too seriously.
But anyway, they apparently did have a committee, unbeknownst to me, and so my name came out of the hat, and the only embarrassing thing was that Shorty Cahoon was down where we were stationed in Calgary. That's the First Brigade, and Shorty and I were now shooting, and he was staying with us, and we were just about to start off, and mail arrived, and there was a letter from George Perks, who was the minister, and I opened the letter, and George said, congratulations on following Hemi as colonel of the regiment. And first time heard of it, and I couldn't very well conceal it from Shorty, and I said, no. Yeah, I said, I have no idea. I mean, Shorty, after all, was my first CO, or Huey Niman was for 2 seconds. But we went out shooting, but this is a terrible blow to Shorty, you know. This is terrible. So in due course, the order came out, and said it had to be, at that point, you had to be a serving officer, and under 55 years of age. And of course, Shorty was not a serving officer, and he was over 55, so that placated him a little bit, and I don't think he ever got over it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did knock out people like that, and I did my 5 years and got a 5-year extension. Once again, the regimental committee, you hear nothing about it, and you're written a flight letter and saying, will you accept it if offered? So you normally say yes.
Yeah.
Then at the end of my 10 years, while I was fully prepared to go, and actually Reg Clark had been approached and said he'd accept, and Princess Patricia stepped in through Dorothy Galt and said, I am 80, and I've had Hammy for so many years, and I've had Cammy for so many years, and I just said, no, that's that. I don't want any change in my lifetime. So, what can be done? So, Dorothy never approached me. I think she went straight to whoever was commanding the senior battalion and the hills and said, this is Lady Patricia's ideas, and take it you would agree. So I suppose they naturally agreed. The next thing I knew was I got a further extension, and Princess Patricia, instead of dying as she comfortably expected to, lived on for another 8 years.
Oh, you were colonel for 18 years?
So I was colonel for 18 years.
Oh, Lord,
a large part of which was we had a plan for Patricia's successor, and she chose Patricia Braeburn.
Patricia
Mountbatten. Oh,
she?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I had to, unfortunately, for me, go through all the negotiations because I didn't like asking Princess Patricia if she wanted a successor. Remember, I asked the old admiral, her husband, I said, we've got to do something about it. He said, would there be a successor? I said, I don't know. It depends what she wants. And finally, the admiral said, okay, I'll take Beth out in the garden, and you go and you get the answer. I can't.
Yeah.
So I got the answer, and it startled her terribly. I never thought she turned pale as a sheep.
Did she really? Never considered
that.
I
never thought. And she said too. Said, would there be? I don't know. And I said, well, it may well be. We shouldn't have had one. You were the first one. It was formed in a sort of first way. Your wish. You're the last one too. Because your name. always remain? And she said, well, I can't decide now. And, naturally, that's the next time you come back. Well, I was over quite often, two or three times a year anyway. Said, no, I'll let you know. And she gave me this great 8-page letter saying, usual royal understatement, providing you and my other senior officers agree. I would nominate my niece, or my cousin and goddaughter of Fishmont Bat to be my successor. And then it went on, great long thing about what a great girl Fishmont Bat was, and all about her, what she'd done and what she was doing, and it's certainly been a great succession.
Well, I'm going to say, yes, she's certainly been a terrific one.
Yeah. Absolutely terrific.
you really were a brigadier when you became colonel in the regiment.
Yeah.
Ah, and before you went to the National Defense College and all that sort of thing. Yeah. Oh, I hadn't realized that you were... I thought it was something you had, after you retired.
No, I took it over directly. Well, then they changed the system again a few years ago and said you couldn't be a serving officer and you had to be retired.
Ah.
Because Jimmy Dextrous, I think, was getting... He was colonel of the... Not the 22nd, but Gilles Turco was colonel of the 22nd, and Polo Bernacci had been, and after General Vanier, Polo did, and was still serving. And I think Jimmy, I suppose he was chief of defense staff, and something was, he was arguing one way as colonel of the regiment, and chief of defense staff,
wearing
adopting a different stance.
He was in what, the Three Rivers Regiment?
Yeah, but that wasn't a regiment he was colonel of.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was a FMR or something like that. It wasn't the FMR.
No.
So the system has changed again, as far as I know. It's now 3 years and 3-year extension. And you have to be retired.
Yeah. Who has it now, Mr. Richard?
George Brown. He was... George ended up out of this funny unification shuffle of CGS, I suppose, but then it got so fogged with mobile command. He was a major general in Ottawa, chief of ground forces. In mobile command, I mean, it was a real muddle, I think, in the early days between mobile command and Ottawa, and probably still is. And I know they were certainly having trouble at the greatest conferences I've attended.
Well, it's kind of amusing to hear you speak about the integration, unification, because actually Norman Ross was one of the people that he had to go back and delete some of the comments in the tape and put in some more somewhat more innocuous remarks. Because he was in the thick of it, of course, in Ottawa at the time.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
That's when you were well out at the Defense College, you see. You worked in effect for the Chairman, Chiefs of Staff, and the Minister, period. You never had to go through any channels.
Yeah.
And one of Heisler's great ideas was that when I become president of the Armed Forces University, and I resisted this strenuously because the university was same nebulous terms as everything else, but it was to include everything from the combat arms school and senior NCO school, everything from there to the staff colleges, the defense college, and I said a campus like that and organizations with varying and differing views and concepts weren't exactly what a university was supposed to be composed.
Yeah, right.
So that one was... That one was dropped, but then it was revived again when they have a 2-star something in Ottawa. I don't know what they call these. Bobby Murdoch was it, the director of education.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it was, but it certainly wasn't the university.
It was sort of that sort of a thing, yeah.
Well, I think I've bored you long enough.
Oh, yeah,
I expect you.
It's been a most entertaining, very interesting session. I'm glad you came because it finishes off some unfinished business, let's put it that way, that we had. And It was very interesting.
I thought you'd left me in the middle of the Mediterranean. I'm surprised.
No, you haven't gone that far. Well, thanks very much, Cam. Anyway, it's been very good.
We paused earlier in this tape for General Ware's off-mic comments regarding the Minister of National Defense. They were not flattering and paint the picture of a vain man completely motivated by his drive for political power. It was very unfortunate that the armed forces were made scapegoat in a scheme far from the best interests of the services.